Blog Talk Radio.
We don't need to utter but three words. Tell this nation what we're talking about. They are big words. We don't need to have a great vocabulary to utter. We don't need to have a philosophical bent to grasp. They are three little words. And we want to let the world know that these words describe what we mean and what we are determined to do about racial injustice. Telling us to slow up. We can hear voices telling us to cool up. Our only answer in conversation turn must be that we have cooled off too long, and if we keep cooling off, we'll end up in a deep freeze. We must go on and say, no, what we are saying to this nation is that we want all of our rights. We want them here.
What your life can truly be. Shining star for you to see. What your life can truly be.
Here we are once again. It is Tuesday nights, and here we have a fabulous show for you tonight. A little historical factors as we open up. You know, we got the Neo Nation, the Black Business Billionaires Network Club. We believe in historical facts. And Dr. King spoke so well and so eloquently about what is right and what is wrong and how humanity should be distributed equally. So tonight we have a special, special show. It's all about real estate with Mrs. Tiki Williams. She's going to teach you everything from beginning to end. She has a special guest tonight. Y'all know the man himself. Dr. James W. Winborn is going to be on with her and going to be discussing real estate, financing, mortgages, pre-approval, securing a mortgage, 1, 2, 3. We'll explain everything to you. Let us give a nice hand and welcome Mrs. Tiki Williams. Oh, come on now, y'all. Y'all know we are, now the technology is always something here. You know, I'm getting old here, so I got to. Yeah.
Well, good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining. I'm super excited to be on and super excited to have such a special guest, Dr. James W. Winborn, on tonight. So we are going to hop in and start talking about how to secure a mortgage and how to get you pre-approved in this market. So let's go ahead and welcome Dr. James W. Winborn on so that we can get started.
I see a number here, which I haven't seen before. Hopefully that is his number. I'm going to open up 347-313. And, you know, here we go. 347-313, your mic is open. we're hoping and praying that that is the man himself. Your mic is open, 347-313. Are you there?
No, I am here, but I'm not Dr. Winborn.
Okay, I'm so sorry for that. I'm sure he'll be in shortly. Miss Kiki Williams, Kiki. Why call you Kiki? That's a young lady from the Apollo Theater.
Okay.
Remember Kiki Williams? Anybody remember Kiki Williams? Let's give her a nice hand. Kiki Williams, Apollo Theater. Since we mentioned her name, we have to give a shout out to Commercialization.
All right. Well, we'll go ahead and get started. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. We'll start with some basic things. First, what is the first? I want to buy a home. Never bought a home before. Don't have any experience whatsoever. Lived in apartments all my life. Rented all my life. What would be the first thing I would have to, in order to prepare myself, to start considering a home, or in other words, getting myself prepared to get a home? What would be the first thing you would advise me?
I would advise, first, looking at your credit. That is very important. Your credit is key, because we have to make sure that you're credit worthy to purchase a home. So FHA, they look at a minimum credit score of 580. They do go below 580. And that requires a 10% down payment. If you are 580 and above, it requires a 3.5% down payment. So your first initial step would be to look at your credit. And you have three credit scores. You have one from TransUnion, Equifax, Experian. And majority of the lenders, they look at your middle credit score. So the number one step, I would say, Not because I'm a realtor, I would say is to get with an educated realtor to help you through that process. Help you to select a lender that you can work with that can look at your credit, help you assess your credit, and determine if you're ready at that point to purchase a home. Another great thing about working with a lender at the beginning is that if you're not ready, they can put a plan in place to help you get ready. So they can say, hey, you know what, you're here. If you can work on A, B, and C, we can get you in a house 6 months, 9 months, or a year from now. So you have a contingency plan in place, which is really great. The second thing is also knowing the money that you'll have to purchase a home, your down payment, which is basically your good faith payment to the lender, for saying, hey, thank you for allowing me to secure this loan. And then you have closing costs. And sometimes people get those mixed up, but they're totally different. Your closing costs are more of the administrative fees that you pay the lender, the title company, for preparing your loan, getting your title work together, making sure that you're able to purchase the home, there's no liens on the home, you have a good and clear title. So those are like the two major costs of purchasing a home. So
great,
being
great.
Able to know that, have those things in place.
Great. And since you lead us into such a wonderful, experience in terms of the process and what we're going through, I know there's a lot of HUD and different governmental agencies and different that have a first-time buyers home buying programs that one can also participate in. But it's so wonderful you started us there, because the man himself is here, Dr. James W. Winborn, and I'll just say to you people that he is a real estate and mortgage guru, financing, purchasing, development. He just knows everything, and you got just two very intricately intelligent people about this whole process, and you're going to learn a lot tonight. You're going to learn a lot tonight, so listen in. While we welcome Dr. James W. Winborn, let's give him a nice hand. Welcome to the show.
Good greetings, everybody. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Awesome. Well, Dr. Winburn, thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine. Dr. Robinson, owe me.
I got that dollar for you.
I mean, you said so many nice things about me. I wanted to slow you up, see if I could go get my kids so that they could hear you. You know.
I hear you.
So I hear we're talking about real estate and we're talking about mortgages, and I want to say congratulations to Ms. Tiki Williams on her show. I've had the opportunity to hear her from a distance, and I'm glad that I could come and contribute and be a part and to, you know, kind of share with what I know. And I don't know, a lot of stuff that I know may be outdated, you know, with all the new stuff that's going on and everything. But I do know this. I heard you because I was talking to someone earlier today who's in the process of getting a mortgage. Well, not actually in the process of getting a mortgage. I'm actually helping them sell their property. And I was talking to the realtor who is helping the individual as working with the individuals as they're getting their mortgage. And they're telling me that they're going to plan on closing in another 2 weeks. But then he's telling me that it's an FHA loan. So automatically my antennas go up. Because anybody that have done FHA loan know that it takes longer than 2 weeks. And although it is a great way for first-time home buyers to purchase property, it's a tedious process because the money is guaranteed and backed by the government. You know, Dr. Robinson, most people think that when you get an FHA loan, you're getting the money from the bank. You are getting the money from that particular bank or mortgage company, but they're able to do it and able to give you so much of the money because I think that the average LTV, which is a loan to value, you'll stop me if I say something, you know, that don't register, the loan to values are like 97, 95, 97%. So if you purchase a house that's, let's say it's $100, they're going to give you $97, $95 to $97 in order to make that purchase, and you have to come up with about, you know, $3 or $5. But the qualifying process is intense because they're giving you so much money. But there are 100 ways of getting mortgages. I know that's what you're asking to talk about. Because there are all type of mortgages. There's all type of financing that one can get. If you're a first-time home buyer, then you may want a FHA loan because they are specifically for first-time home buyers. And you don't have to have that great of a credit to do FHA. It was 5-something, but since the pandemic, they've added another layer of protection. And so it's like the credit score has to be 6-something now with the FHA. It'll probably go back down once things change. But did you guys know that they're changing the reporting requirements on the credit report?
So Dr. Winburn, some lenders are able to do a 5 for FHA.
Able to do a whole?
To do a 580 credit score?
Right. But you know what, Ms. Williams, they were doing 580s. Are they doing – I don't think they had stopped doing the 580s during the pandemic because I know that I had a couple 580s for a deal that I was doing in Pennsylvania, and the program changed and they knocked it up to 620. So you've been able to get 580s through recently?
Yes, we have a couple lenders here in Texas that are able to do 580.
Okay. Yeah, well, so I was hoping that eventually they would come back down to the 580 for the FHA, and that's good because that's been the, the norm. Pardon me. The 580 is normal for the average FICO score. They still would like for you to do it higher. If they could, but they will fund it at a 580. But now you have to have. Go ahead.
Now, I do ask y'all a question, possibility. Is it state-to-state regulated?
Yes. Each state have different requirements, depending on the state, because the laws are different. But now, even with the FHA, they vary just a little bit. But most of the FHA is exactly the same. Why? Because it's government-backed. So the government covers all of the state, follow me, but there may be some other differences between the states. Now, I know most of the times I deal with investors. And so as with investors, I do know that the states require different things as far as the appraisals are concerned, as far as the surveys are concerned, as far as permits, how do you get the permits, and things of that nature. I know that varies state to state. And so I know that in some states, when you talk to investors, they tell you, like, you know, don't do, you know, buy one family home in Georgia, but don't try to build anything, you know, because of the regulations that they have in different states. Or they talk about how easy it is to buy and build stuff in Jersey. So it all depends. But the thing with the FHA is that is the requirements. They want you to be on your job for 2 years. So you have to dock out, you know, the paper. And I heard Ms. Williams talking about closing costs. And it's so funny because you're right. A lot of people get that mixed up, the closing costs and the down payment. And I told people, hey, what is the closing cost? I was like, that's the money that you got to pay to buy the loan. You know, that's the money you have to pay to get the money. So it's going to cover all of those third-party vendors, insurance, appraisal, survey, you know, all that good stuff. You know? Hello, is my mic on?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the one berm. So I know, like with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac,
yeah.
They have a couple of programs on the conventional side that will offer a 3% down payment. Do you have any insight on those programs?
So the conventional financing, if they're doing a 3%, what they have now, they have something called Streamlines, and they have FHA-like. Okay, so they're FHA-like programs. So they're designed to give you higher LTVs. However, what we have to do is, in those programs, you need to check and see then what are the credit rating requirements. Is there higher requirements in order to get this higher LTV? What about the interest rate? Are they protecting themselves with the interest rate? The loan that they're going to give me on this, and it's going to be heavy loaded on the front end. Are they going to put all the taxes, all of all the interest in the beginning of the loan? So now that I'm making my payment, I'm thinking I'm making a full payment because I'm sending them $1,000. My payment is $1,000, so I send them $1,000, but then I find out that only $100 is going towards the principal. The other $900 is going towards the interest. So when you go in and you start digging through a lot of these programs, and I'm telling this, you know, so people could be have all the data, all the information that they need when they're going into these deals, because when you get into the deal, you know, other things start coming out. So the conventional loans that's doing that probably, which is good, because I remember there was a time when conventional wasn't going to go any higher than 80-85. So if you got conventional financing now that you got you into the 90s, 95, 97, that's good. But let's look at the lender and see how are they securing their risk. What are their risk factors? Are they looking at the score, the credit score? And if they're looking at the credit score, are they looking at the number, or are they looking at the trade lines? Or are they looking at the length of the trade lines? Are they looking at who didn't send you? You know, how are they making their decisions and funding this deal? What I like to do, Ms. Williams, oftentimes, is I don't like dealing with loan officers. You know, if I'm putting a deal in, I want to talk to the underwriter. Because they're the ones making the decision. So I tell me what you want. Tell me what you want to get this deal good. Tell me how the paper needs to come in. What do you need to see? And so when you're applying for a mortgage, your documentation is telling a story. And you want to tell that story as clear as possible because you don't want them asking any questions. And you want to go into a deal when you're putting your paperwork together with this mindset. They're looking at this paper and they're trying to find a reason not to give me this money.
Absolutely. So, Dr. Rumburn, could you kind of expand on what type of paperwork people need to have in place so that, you know, when they do go to underwriting, they can start working on this now instead of getting there and trying to put it together, some of the key components that they need?
So if you are a first-time home buyer and you're buying a home to live in and you're doing an FHA loan, the bank is going to require some basic things that they ask on all the loans. And they're going to want to see 4 months bank statements. They want to see 2 months bank statements. They want to see 60 days of bank statements. Now, why do they want to see that? They want to see where your money at. They not only want to see where your money at, they want to see where your money coming from. They want to know if there's any large deposits. They want you to explain where you get that large deposit from. If somebody gave you some money, then if it's a gift, they're going to want to know, this FHA, they're going to want to know, where did they get the money from? So you need to be prepared to source the money. They're going to want 4 weeks of pay stubs. They're going to want 2 years of 1040, your tax return. So they want everybody to be on the job for 2 years because in their mind, 24 months is an indication of, you know, stability in that. In that job or that position. The other things that you're going to need as far as your paperwork, your pay stub, your bank statements, your taxes, and probably any other assets that you may have. They want to document. So if you have stocks, bonds, or anything of that nature that represents an asset, that's good also because it also helps you to qualify for the mortgage. One trick that I told people to do if you're a first-time home buyer, I know you're looking for this home and you are living the American dream, but you might want to consider a two-family home in your first venture as opposed to a one-family. Because that two-family, number one, is going to allow you to buy more of a house because they're going to be able to take that additional units, income from those units, and add it to your income, okay? So now the normal income rate is 30. So if your house is $100, they don't want you spending any more. They want the income to be $30. You follow me? So if my house is $100, they want my income to be $30. So that's the qualifying income. Now, but if I got another unit, another apartment that's paying $1,000 a month, I now have an additional $12,000 that I can add into my income, which was going to qualify me to buy a bigger house or a more expensive house. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you want to consider that also. The other thing is they have what is called something that's called DTIs. Your DTI is your debt-to-income ratio. Your debt is how much, if you get a dollar, how much out of that dollar are you spending on your debt? Again, so if you have a dollar, they don't want you to be spending any more than 36 cents out of that dollar on debt. And then once they give you the mortgage, they understand that your debt is going to increase. They don't want that number to be any higher than 38 or 39 cents. Does that make sense? So
yes, absolutely.
That's why they tell you don't make any big purchases don't do anything like that, anything that may affect your debt, because now your debt to income is going to be higher. And that alone, I have seen people lose deals because just before they were going to close, somebody had the bright idea to go out and buy a car.
Or yes, I've seen that too.
Yeah, go out and buy an expensive piece of jewelry. they bling-blinging, but they lost their house because now their debt is too high.
Absolutely. I tell my clients all the time during my initial consultation, when we start this process, consider yourself to be in credit jail.
Right.
In credit jail.
Mm-hmm.
You can't buy anything new, don't open up anything, and don't use anything you currently have.
Right. None of that. Don't touch nothing until we finish. Yeah. And so those are primarily for our first-time home buyers. You know, so we covered the debt, we covered the income, we kind of talked about what the underwriters will be looking for and the documentation that you're going to need in order to do the FHA loan. The other conventional loans with the lower LTVs, they are a little easier, but you have to put up more money. Again, if the house is $100 and your LTV is 80%, then they're going to give you $80 on that 100, and they're going to be looking for you to come up with the other $20. That's your down payment. And then you have your closing costs and points, which sometimes, and Ms. Williams could verify this, we can get the seller to pay those closing costs and points for you. Okay, they call it a seller concession or a seller contribution. Basically,
yes.
they're not contributing anything. They're just taking less money.
Yes, but currently in this market, we are not seeing any of that happening in this current market. But that is something that in the past we have been able to do.
Oh, yeah.
And it has been successful. I've been able to do it for my clients. And so once the market changes and turns again, because it will, you know, we might end up seeing that, being able to kind of factor that in again.
Right. And so now if we're talking investor, the game changes a little bit. The qualification for the loans change, the type of loans change, and all of that. So if you're an investor, a lot of guys now, they're doing what is called, they want to flip properties. And in flipping, getting money to flip the properties, that has changed also. Because what a lot of lenders are doing now, they are not looking at your credit at all, okay? Well, I don't want to say at all. They're giving you credit, let's say, about 10% of factor into the deal. What your credit is going to do, they're going to look at your credit, and your credit is going to determine how much of a risk they're going to take, right? And that risk is reflected in the interest rate. You follow what I just said? So if you have a low credit score, they are going to do the deal based on the numbers in the deal, whether you've got good credit or not. Whether you have good credit or not is only going to affect how high your interest rate is going to be on the deal, because that's how they balance their risk, okay, with raising the interest rate. But if the deal makes sense, if the numbers in the deal make sense, if you could purchase the property, let's say, at 30% of the value, put another a couple of dollars in it, 20% in it, and now you have the after repair value is at 60% of the debt, they'll do that all day because they know that they can come in, anything go wrong, and get their money back. Does that make sense? So long as the numbers in the deal are good, it's a gravy for an investor. You just have to be able to, you just have to know that you can have the ability to sell the property once you have taken acquisition. And they don't loan to individuals. So they were only loaned to a corporation. So any of us right now, you can go online, go to Google, you can go in and register and start your corporation or LLC. And now you have a legal instrument that you can now go out and finance property in. And remember, they're going to do the deal simply based on the numbers. Now, what are the LTVs on those deals? Those LTVs work like this because the banks will now will give you the money to repair, to fix it up, and the money to purchase. So now, depending on the institution, some will give you 95% of the fix-up money, rehab money, and some and 100% of the purchase. Some will give you 100% of the fix-up and 95% of the purchase. So
even with that, do they sometimes require you to have cash reserves?
Yes. Sometimes they still want to see that you have X amount of dollars put aside to any event something go wrong. In the event whoever was going to rent the apartment don't rent it, or whoever was going to buy don't buy, that you have the ability, even if you don't spend it, to make those payments. Now, sometimes they're not only looking for the reserve, they want you to put that money in escrow, and so that it can be held. So no one can get to it, but after a certain amount of time, the money is then released. The other thing...
And so also, when you stated before that they'll help with the rehab, now, they do require you to have the money up front, and then they have draws and you're able to do that, or will some lenders front you your rehab money up front?
Back in the day, I don't want to say how far back. I don't want anybody to know how old I really am, because I know I sound sexy. Back in the day, you could get the money up front. But what happened was some of the contractors were getting the money and then decided they didn't want to do any more work. So what they do now is they structured a program where you have to put up your first bit of money to do the work. Okay? So you'll spend your $10,000, let's say $10,000. You went in, you got your containers, you got your crew together, and your first leg of the project was to gut the place. So you went in and stripped it, took all the walls out, snatched all the plumbing out, and you took it to its bare bones, depending on that's how the project went. And let's say to gut the place, that cost you $10,000, okay? Now what they're going to do, they're going to give you that $10,000. And then for doing that work, that's going to be your first draw. And then you take that money and you continue to work, and then once you finish that, then they'll give you some more. And once you finish that, they give you some more. So you need to be aware of that also, that your first draw is going to come out of your own pocket.
Okay. Now, do they require that work to be inspected?
Yes. The bank is going to have their inspectors to come out and look at the work that was done before they released the draw. So you go in, you do the work, then you call the bank and say, listen, we finished, or we're going to be finished on Thursday. I need a draw release on Friday, so I need for your guy to come out on Thursday when we finish, so you can sign off on the work that we've done so that we can keep going. So they will send their inspector out. That's like, if we go back to the home buyers, the first time home buyers, back in the day, we could use our own appraisers. But we can't use our own appraisers any longer. Now everything is handled by the bank. The bank is going to send out the appraiser. And the appraiser client is the bank, and so they're always very conservative because they feel as though that they have a responsibility, a fiduciary responsibility to protect the bank. So that has affected some of the values. I don't know if that affects the market in Texas, but I know I've done a lot of stuff over in Pennsylvania and New Jersey and some in New York. That kind of stuff affects the value. But you had a question about the investor stuff?
No, that was it. I want to go back to first-time home buyer because I know some of the challenges that we've had is mm-hmm. that recently, and I'm so glad that they've done that, is student loans. Student loans have been a headache for some of us. But mm-hmm. now, and this is a recently, it was they looked at 1% of your loan as your payment, and they included that into your debt-to-income ratio. Now it's only half. percent, which is going to open the door up for a lot more people to be able to purchase. So super excited about that.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
But I do want to talk about the 1099 because I know we might have some entrepreneurs on here. So any feedback for a 1099 entrepreneur who is trying to purchase a home?
So self-employed individuals or 1099 contractors, normally they have a hard time because during the course of all of their 1099s and how they've been doing their taxes, they've been hiding money. And so now they're trying to buy something and they can't show an income because they've been hiding the money the whole time. So if you are, I tell guys, if you 1099 or you self-employed, you may have to figure out a way to show more income on your returns so that you can, you know, not look like a charity case. And so, you know, and the bank understands, their lenders understand, especially for investors, what they've been doing. So they give them an opportunity to show more income. There's different ways that they can show more income. And I have had people make adjustments on their filings to increase their amount of income so that they can then qualify for the property. But they had to pay the taxes according to that increase. So you just need to be aware of that. That there's always more than one way to skin a cat. But yeah, 1099 and self-employed, they does present some challenges sometimes.
Okay, now do they have I know I've been told in the past that they need a minimum of 2 years of tax returns for 1099 as their 1099 employment to be qualified for a loan. Is that 100% true, or is there a workaround around that sometimes?
No, I think that's 100%. You know, I would say that that's 99% true. There's always that one case where, you know somebody, you know, that can do stuff. But for the most part, the way the underwriting is done now is called desk underwriting. And with the desk underwriting, they take the human factor out of it. And so it's like they're running the whole package through a machine. It has to meet certain criteria. If it don't, it's automatically rejected, and it don't even go any further. So, you know, once the system is set, the system is set. But there's always the possibility, you know, my uncle owned the company. You know, so, but that's not anything that anyone could bank on.
Okay, awesome. Okay. And so what about VA? I know that we have some of our VA people that might be on here too. So any insight on VA? I know sometimes people don't know their full benefits and, you know, what they might be eligible for VA, but it's definitely a great program for our veterans.
It definitely is a great program for our veterans, and you're absolutely right. Most people don't understand the benefits that come with being a vet, and most vets, they hear about certain stuff and they don't even apply. That they can get, they don't even realize that they could get a mortgage, that they don't have to be living in the street and things of that nature. Those vets that have, you know, fate has taken them to that route. But, the VA is another good route. Again, there are all type of loans, and there's all type of different ways to even qualify for those loans. Listen, if you have a job and you've been on your job for any length of time, if you don't have enough money in your account to show, do you know that they would allow you to use money that's in your pension or that's in your saving, your 401k and things of that nature to also help you qualify for your loan?
Yes, that's awesome. Awesome.
Mm-hmm. 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 So, you know, as we navigate through these processes, if you have a good person that you're working with, they can, you know, inform you and keep you in touch with all of the little intricacies of the mortgage and the finance process of what you're trying to do, whether you're a first-time home buyer, whether you're an investor. Listen, there are tons of ways to make money in the real estate business for people that listen without even doing real estate itself, without dealing with what they call the sticks, the bricks and the sticks, and the tenants and the toilets. There are ways to make money on the finance side of the real estate business or on the mortgage business just by selling mortgage paper. Yeah, mortgage notes. There are companies that will just buy the notes. There are companies that will not only buy the notes, they'll buy a partial income stream. So some years ago, there was a bank, a mortgage company that was going out of business called Investors and Lenders. There was another company called Access Capital that was looking to extend their portfolio. I happened to be in a place where I was able to broker this deal. I was able to take all of the notes that Investors and Lenders had, and a lot of them was non-performing notes, and we can get into that in a minute, and then sell those notes at a discount to Access Capital. There's not real estate. So we're doing a real estate deal, but it had nothing to do with real estate, just the mortgage paper on the note. Although I was able to snatch one of those houses off that list. But, we just sold paper. It's just the selling of the paper. It'll cost you nothing. And all you're doing is, so you have a guy that's selling his paper, and he wants $2. But you know somebody else that will pay $5 for it. So you go get him. You tell him it's $5. Get a man his suit, and you put it through in your pocket. Real simple.
Okay, so how do we even get in that type of circle to even be able to do that? Like, how would the average person be able to say, hey, where would you even find a note or even people that would want to even buy a note?
Okay, so you can go down to the Hall of Records in your town. In there, you can go to the mortgage books, the mortgage and deed books. So if you go to the mortgage books, it's kind of a tedious work, but you just pick up the book and you just flip through the pages. And you know, you'll see all the banks, bank, 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 and all of a sudden you'll see an individual named John Smith. So that what that means is this: John Smith is a holder of a note, okay? He is the mortgagee, and he has given a mortgage to a mortgager, and that mortgager is paying him.
Okay, I think we had a technical difficulty there. We probably lost Dr. Winborn. I'm sure he'll be back in a minute. Sometimes people, this technology is real in your face. We're live in studio, and so we have these problems. Until he comes, I'm going to geez. I think all the technology is going bad. My brain technology is going bad as well. Yeah, let me see here. Let me do this. Okay, people, I'm just going to give some service announcements if it's all right with you, Mrs. Tiki Williams.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. I want to remind the folks that we know that $2.7 trillion is coming to the United States to do solar energy, clean energy, electrical energy. They're changing the power grid. They're developing new technology. They're even going into the universities and colleges and asking students to take courses in those studies, whether it's engineering, whether it's architectural, whether it's design or management. And they're going to allow them, they're going to pay for a 2-year, 4-year, 6-year run, okay, in the university. So we want to make sure that the black colleges and universities get a portion of this money. We want to definitely make sure that the black community, aka the African American community, gets a part of this finances, and we're looking forward to. I'm trying to do several things here, people. And you know, when you get old, you can't do several things. But we want to make sure that this money is also go through our communities. This has been going on for 30 years. This is not new. This energy prospect that the government is doing is not new. It's been going on for a long time. And there's a brother, Mr. Ronald Bathia, who has been studying this, who has been advocating politically, economically, and socially on behalf of the colors, our community of colors. And he wants us to know that we have been duped, scammed, and we have been overlooked in this particular area. There's opportunity to redevelop communities. That means the poorer communities, they go inside there with these fundings and they do the grid changes and they give jobs to people. They fix up the parks for the children and the projects is redone and refixed. But when they go in, they do a total remodeling, if you will, like a facelift in your community. And also the job opportunities changes everything. It changes the medical services in your community. It changes the sanitation services, the police services, you know, the medical services. You see a tremendous change when there's urban renewal in the community. So we want to make sure that the black community, the minority community, community of colors, get this particular assistance as well. So we want you to go to a website that's going to educate you on this whole process. We're going to take you, Mr. Robert Zathia has been doing this for 30 years. He has an extensive website that's going to take you from that 30 years and bring you concurrent, explain everything to you on this special new energy that's coming to America and how it's going to work and how it's going to be funded and what's the opportunities there for you in your community. So please, sir, ma'am, go to positive, positive, change, change, like Peter, C like cat, .com, positivechange.com. Go there and check out that website and educate yourself on this new energy. Get to know what it is politically, what it does for communities. Also, I forgot to mention the farmers, the black farmers, solar farming, a lot of economic development going in the farming area. I'm from South Carolina, and both of my grandfathers were sharecroppers and farmers, and I know how difficult it is getting subsidies and getting programs and getting financial assistance for the black farmers. The white farmers were getting this all the time. The black farmers were neglected. And matter of fact, some years ago, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, black farmers were duped again for subsidies and set-asides and financial assistance. And Mr. Biden, President Biden promised this 2020 presidential year, 2020-21, that he would put subsidies together to make sure he make up for those that the black farmers didn't get. Didn't happen. He reneged on it. It's not going to happen, people. And so we have to make sure that when there are subsidies coming through, that they're equally dispersed. That's one of the major issues in America, is dispersing the economy equally to the black community as well as the white community. Our schools should be equally funded. Our housing, our infrastructure, our hospitals and nursing homes and, you know, fire departments and police departments, we have to have a different type of distributing of funds for urban renewal and economic development in our communities. And if you know anything about economic development in the black community, has been neglected for many, many years. But we get more money to the gross national product than anyone else. Three or seven or whatever it is, $1 trillion a year. If we was to break away, become our own independent society, we'll be the sixth largest society in the world. So I want to thank you so much for this public service announcement. Dr. Winborn is back with us, and we're going to bring him back in as well.
Thank you. Forgive me, my phone died on me. So I don't know what the last thing you heard, but I think that we were talking about the mortgage paper and the mortgage notes and all that stuff. But are there any questions so far?
No, that's great. I mean, that's great information that you're able to go down to your deeds of trust, be able to identify who is actually a note holder, be able to contact them, and then put them together with someone who is willing to buy the note. So my
right.
next question is, now how do we find the person who is willing to then buy the note?
That's easy. You know, go to Google, buy note buyers, and they'll come up, you know, and then they're looking for people that will bring them notes. And, yeah, you can just Google it, and you'll get all type of come back. They're groups. When I was in Jersey, I used to be a part of a group. They used to have a meetup, and they were all note buyers, and everyone would just come. Buyers and sellers, they would come and exchange notes and things of that nature. So these groups are out there. These people are out there. It's just a point of knowing about it, you know, knowing about it and understanding it as an additional revenue stream, income stream that you can take advantage of that won't cost you a lot of money. You don't need any special education to do it. If you know a little bit about, you know, mortgages and notes and stuff like that, or if you know a little bit about real estate, you know that each deal is predicated upon the note, the mortgage note. The note is the money. And I think some people don't know that, though, and that's important. That when you go to the closing, you sign that note. That is the money. That is the debt instrument. The mortgage only describes the term of the debt, but the note is the actual instrument that controls the debt, because the holder of the note can take it and cash it in and or sell it. Like we're talking about buying those notes. So you can buy those notes at a discount, especially if they're non-performing. You can buy them at a discount, sometimes a very steep discount. Mm-hmm.
So non-performing would be our people that we would consider our pre-foreclosure people?
Correct. So that person is in pre-foreclosure. He has a mortgage that he's not paying. The person who he is not paying is the holder of that note. So he is holding a non-performing note because the money is not coming in as it ought to on that note, on that debt security.
Okay, awesome. So then how do you kind of get paid in this process? Because you're kind of like the middleman.
Right.
And so how do you get paid as a middleman in this process?
So you create your paperwork. You create your paperwork and your agreements. You know, you have your paperwork and your consulting agreement with the person that's selling the note that I will find a buyer for you at this price. Then you go to the other person who's buying the note and say, I can sell you the note at this price. So your money is the in-between. You make the margin. The difference between what it's selling for and what it buys, what they pay for, goes into your pocket.
Okay, awesome. Okay.
Mhm. So that's how that works. And then the other thing with the note. The other thing with the note that's important that people need to understand is that if you are in a home and you are in foreclosure, right, technically, in most cases, the bank do not have a right to foreclose on your home. Whether you making the payment or not, believe it or not. Hold on, hold on. You know, I'm in Brooklyn, so fire trucks, emergency medicals everywhere. So that's another thing. You want to learn more about your note, that instrument, because if you have refied your home, which most people have, okay, or if you have your note has been assigned to another bank, so you bought your house, and the bank that lent you the money was ABC Bank, but then they assigned your mortgage to CDF Bank. You follow what I'm saying? CDF Bank.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Don't have a right to foreclose on your house. Only the ABC Bank, because that's who you made your agreement with.
Gotcha. Okay.
And that's who you gave your note to. So it was a promissory note. The moment he sells that note, it releases you from that obligation, believe it or not. Most people don't know that, because we don't understand the mechanics of what happens behind the scenes. But what's happening behind the scenes is that that note has been cashed. He's cashed it in that $20. So you have satisfied your obligation because you gave him the note. You gave him the money. Now, that's what he did with it. He assigned it to someplace else, right? Because that's what the assignment is. So I'm talking about buying notes. When they assign the note, that's simply what they did, okay? They put the mortgage in place, they took a note, and then they sold it to somebody else, another bank, because that bank is a servicer, and they're in the position to sit around for the next 30 years for you to send your money in. The bank that lent you the money, they invested. They want to get in and out. So they had actually sold that note before they actually given you the money. And so that note, that promissory note, is the power in the deal. Only the person who has that physical note, people, have the right to foreclose on your home. If they cannot produce that physical note, they do not have the right to foreclose on your home. And if we're talking about 100 banks, 99 of them do not have the physical note.
Now, this is some great information. This is something I did not know.
Mm-hmm.
This is great. So I hope you guys are catching what he is throwing out here, because this is some good info. These are some gems that he's dropping for us right now.
Boom. If I was sex, I'd be dropping bombs. Boom, boom.
Yeah, I would say bombs. There you go. There you go. They're bombs.
But, yeah, you have to understand what you have. I'm working with a client right now. Okay, so I said to you early in the beginning of the conversation, I'm working with a young lady that's selling her home. Okay? The young lady that's selling her home, I've been working with her for 8 years. And for 8 years, she has not given the mortgage company a dime.
I'm sorry, for 8 years she hasn't paid a mortgage?
Correct. For 8 years she hasn't paid a mortgage. Because I've tied them up in court, and we've tied them up with litigation, and we've made them prove that they have the right to foreclose on the house. I know, we know, she now knows that they don't. They're incapable of doing it. Okay? So if you have relatives and they tell you that they're in foreclosure, and then they're trying to get a modification, and then they denied the modification, there's a reason why they denied the modification. They denied the modification because technically the servicer don't have the right or the authority to change the structure, to modify the note. But it's not theirs. and they don't have it.
Now, that was a bomb. That was dropped. That was a bomb right there. I never knew that.
Yeah, no, they don't want to buy them. They always deny them. Or what they will do is they try to trick you and give the client something that's called a forbearance. And so they'll take whatever the outstanding amount that you owe and then put it on the back of the loan. Okay? So they haven't changed it any. They just moved the debt around so that you can keep bringing it in. The crash that happened back in, what was it, 08? When Obama came into office, right? The crash.
Yes, I remember
happened,
that. Mm-hmm.
Okay, when everything fell apart and the mortgage industry fell apart, right? What happened? What happened was that they were writing these mortgages, and people were signing these promissory notes. These notes guaranteed payment on the loan, right? What the bank was doing when they were selling the notes or they was assigning the notes, they were taking the notes and using them on Wall Street to back the stock market and to back certain stocks, preferred stocks. All right? This stock over here is better than that stock over there because this stock over here is backed by promissory notes with people that have 700-800 FICO scores. So we know this money coming in. Okay? Now, the problem with that is it's called double dipping because the moment you use it to back the stock, it's no longer a note. It's now a security. And it can't be both. And so that's out of the – so no one from that point on, if your note – if you live in a property and you purchase – and your bank has assigned the mortgage or have sold the note, there is no way that they can ever produce that note because they now use it. They put it in a pool of a whole bunch of other notes and distributed it on Wall Street, and people bought those notes. So and now in order for someone to foreclose on your home, it has to be the holder of the note. It was 15,000 people that bought this stock. Each of them would have to come in and foreclose to try to get the money from that. That's not going to happen. But they're not going to tell you that. Our system is set up on consent. Okay? Our system is set up on consent. So if you consent, remember now, the police can't come to your house unless they got a warrant or unless you consent to let them in. They can't search your car. That's why they ask you, can I search your car? You can say no because everything is based on consent. So when you foreclose, when you've been foreclosed on, it's because you consented to it. You allowed them to do it. You complied. You're like, okay, well, yeah, I did owe them the money. You know what I mean? And then they come in and they take advantage of you. If you don't know, but if you know, you know. So this lady that I'm working with now, I've been working with her for 8 years. She has not paid a dime in the mortgage. And now she's about to sell a house and make $200,000 profit off of it.
Wow, this is awesome. This is some great, great info. So I would like to go ahead and open up for any questions from the audience. If we have any, if you guys would like to open up the mic, if we have anybody have any questions.
Okay, we're going to open up 347-313. Probably have some questions now. 347-313, your mic is open.
Hello, guys. My name is Samantha Robinson. Hi, Uncle Ronnie.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Hi, Uncle Ronnie.
How are you? Hi, Uncle Ronnie. Hi, Kiki.
I don't know if this is what we can discuss all of this. This is my niece.
Yes, hello.
This is my niece.
No, I didn't have any questions. I just wanted to thank you guys for all the information that you provided. I was taking my notes and... I'm just trying to get to the next level, you know? And that's pretty much it. I just want to say thank you and hi to my uncle.
You're very welcome.
And I still have a phone. I still have my phone number there just in case. Okay, thank you so much. We'll go on to 609-957. 609, you have any questions in reference to real estate with Mrs. Tiki Williams and Dr. James W. Wenborn?
All right, let's get it together. This is Greg Hall. I do have a question in terms of, can property be used as collateral? And let's say, in other words, let's say I say to someone, I want to borrow some money from you, right? And I own some property. Is there any way of my making some kind of legal agreement whereby if I do not pay, they could, you know, like somehow get a part of the property or foreclose on the property? Is that doable?
Absolutely, because all you're doing is you're using the property as collateral. You're collateralizing the deal with the property. And so what they will do is they will put a lien on the property until the debt is satisfied.
All right. What other instruments might be used, in that sort of situation where kind of like as a promissory note, are there other things other than property that persons could use to make those sort of arrangements?
Sure, you can collateralize anything of value, your car or your jewelry. There are people that get payday loans by, you know, collateralizing their car, you know, putting a lien on the car. You can lien anything and then borrow against it.
Okay. All right. That's basically about it. Thank you.
You can do a deal where I've done deals where the guy's purchasing a house. He owns other properties. He's trying to buy this property. He doesn't have enough money to do it, but he's got another property that's got some equity in it. Instead of going and refining that property, we just cross-collateralize. So we've used two properties. We've used the equity in two properties to fund one deal. So all of those things can be done. Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome. Is that it on the questions?
Oh, yes, that's it for me, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we got a host. well. We got jokes.
it's gonna be a minute before I get that out my system. Go ahead.
We'll get that dollar. Holla. Well, we got so many good hosts tonight. We just spoke with our Professor Gregory Hall, who's a financial genius, and now we got our coach Morale, who counseling and helping people to get their social and mental conditioning together in the pursuit of life, liberty, and happiness. Ms. Morale, Coach Morale, you are on with Mrs. Tiki Williams and her guest, Dr. Jane Doug Wimborne, and we're talking about real estate. We'd like to bring you in.
Yes, well, thank you so much, Dr. Ron, always doing a great job as usual, and to Mrs. T.T. Williams, excellent job, I'm telling you, and of course, Dr. Wimborne, the information, I've lived through a lot of what you're talking about, and I wish I knew you guys then, but
yeah.
I am preparing. I took copious notes in terms of so that I can apply what you guys have been saying tonight. Thank you for your time and your expertise.
Great.
Truly appreciate it. And Ms. Tiki, welcome.
Thank you. It is a pleasure, and I'm humbled to be here. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. God bless.
God bless.
Okay, as usual, you know, we get a lot of text messages. A lot of our listeners text message us from all over the world, actually. And we have a text message from Mrs. Maria Rodriguez from San Juan, Puerto Rico, and she wants to know, in terms of investment properties in Puerto Rico, in terms of the kind of investment y'all was talking about, and Mrs. Tiki Williams, she's asking you, do the same type of procedures apply in Puerto Rico as well as in the States?
So those, it might be a little bit different over in Puerto Rico. I haven't done anything over in Puerto Rico. But what I can do, if she's interested, is align her with an agent in Puerto Rico that can assist her. And not sure if Dr. Wimborne has any insight on Puerto Rico, but we can definitely align you with somebody that could be able to assist you, though.
Yeah, Puerto Rico is pretty much the same as the rest of the United States because it belongs to the United States. It's a part of the U.S. So most of the federal laws, FHA, things of that nature, are the same. And I would imagine, I know that there are investors and lenders that fund in Puerto Rico. So I think that, again, there may be slight differences, but I don't think that those differences are like any different than, you know, they may be in, you know, Minnesota or California. Any of the other states, just small variations for the most part, ma'am.
Okay, great. We have somebody from my neck of the woods in Allendale, South Carolina, Mary Allen, and she wants to know, she hears a lot about getting properties for investment purposes or getting properties to accumulate wealth with no money down, and she want to know how do that work.
So no money down is a little tricky in the verbiage. No money down don't mean no money. What it means is that you're not putting down a down payment. And you may not be putting down a down payment because in your area where you live, and as Ms. Williams mentioned earlier, it may be a case where the seller can give concessions, you follow me, or give contributions. So the seller can sometimes contribute up to 6% of the deal. So if the deal is, let's say, $100, they can put in $6. Now, if you have an FHA deal where they're giving you $97 on that $100, then you really only need $3, then you're good. You follow what I'm saying? So the down payment, no down payment, there are possibilities where you can have a no down payment deal, but let's not forget there are still the other closing costs and points, which the seller may have paid, but he's not paying that now because he is giving you a gift of equity or something of that nature for the down payment. So you're still going to have to pay for the lawyer. You're still going to have to pay for the appraisal. You're still going to have to pay for the insurance. If it's an FHA, you're going to have to get, right, things of that nature. So no money down sounds good, but I don't want you to think that that means no money at all. It don't mean no money at all. It just means there's no down payment.
Exactly. I mean, and there is also down payment assistance, and
right.
Some people think that money is free. It's not.
No, it's not.
There are some contingencies with that. It normally comes with a higher interest rate.
Right.
So right now, you know, we have interest rates that going at 2.4 or 2.6. When Texas, for down payment assistance, through TSHAC, your interest rate would be 3.6. So now it is taking you up quite a bit, which is going to also increase your monthly mortgage payment as well. Sometimes, like I said, there are some forgivable programs, and there are different requirements. Like you might be required to stay in the home for 5 years. You're not able to sell. If you do
right.
sell, then you will be required to pay that money back.
A penalty, right.
Okay. Thank you so much. Ms. Tiki Williams, this is a question for you, and I think we lost her. Did we lose her? Okay, we did lose her. Yes,
okay.
We did lose her. Okay. So I'm going to continue with the announcements until she comes back. People, we want you to not forget, and since we got Dr. Winborn here as well, we don't want you to forget the reparations program. We want you to go to the website, MyMYProject, project.org, and sign up for reparations, $8. Sign up for reparations. You know, it's only $8, but you can actually sign up as big as your pockets are. Starts at $8 and goes up to $1 million, and you decide which one you want to choose, but it's going to be a tremendous opportunity for you and your family to see income and wealth because we're going to keep the money in the family. We're going to circulate the black dollar back into the community, and we're going to help develop great opportunities for our families going forward in a continuous economic development program. So we want you to go in there and join at My MY Project, project, NEO, N-E-O, .org. My MY Project, project, NEO, N-E-O, .org. Tremendous opportunity. And Dr. Wimborne, you want to say a little something about it as well?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, listen, we have an opportunity to take control of our own finances, people. We have set up a system where you can make small investments into our National Negro Treasury and be able to draw from that treasury to put money in your pocket, into your family's pocket, and go out and put money into the street as we do missions of reparation to help others as we're coming along. The system is designed that as long as you stay in it, you'll grow with the system. And as a system, as you go high within the system, you are earning and pulling in more and more money to do more and more things for yourself and to do bigger reparation missions. And so we want to encourage everybody, listen, take some time to invest in yourself, invest in your people. Look at what's going on around us. Look at the TV. Our country here in America is in a state of regression. A lot of people are moving backwards. The laws are moving backwards. They are getting rid of voter suppression. They're putting voter suppression laws in place, okay? They're trying to keep our people, black people, people of color, from participating in the system. We need to take control. And we look and we see the police brutality has been going on and on and on and on and on. I tell people, you can say what you want. I've done the research. I've done the study. The only thing that has changed pretty much from the 1960s up until now is the color of the pictures. The posters still stay the same. The people are still crying and saying the same thing. We still see the police beating black people. Nothing has changed. But we have the opportunity where we can invest in ourselves and create financial independence for us and our families and our neighborhoods and those of us that have been disenfranchised. Please go check it out. If there ever was a time where we needed to come together, now is that time. I think I heard Dr. Robinson say earlier that we would be the sixth largest economic country as a people, because we have money. We got plenty of money. We just don't do the right thing with it. We got money, but we send it out and send it everywhere, everywhere, everywhere. And we have not learned to circulate it amongst ourselves. That's another thing that we're working on. Part of Project Neo is we're bringing in all black businesses. We're bringing in all black businesses so that we can patronize those businesses as we're going out and doing our acts of reparation. Okay, as we are going out and building businesses for ourselves. And so the program is great. It allows, we have several income streams. You can sell NEO products and make money. You can hire people within NEO and build you a team within NEO that you guys can go out and make money collectively. So there's a lot of things that we're doing, and this is the time to do it. So, again, without stressing it, go by the website, www.myprojectneo.org. That's www.myprojectneo.org. Tell a friend, tell a neighbor, tweet it, put it on Facebook, put it on TikTok, Instagram, whatever. Let's get it out there to our people, because our people need to know about this. The only thing that's holding us back, the only shortcoming we have now with Project Neo, is that enough people don't know about it. We got to let more people know about this so we can continue to get the traction and can continue to build and build and build on what we're trying to do. We want you to be a part of that. Yes. So, again, please go by, check it out. Say, I want to be here.
And I forgot to mention that with the reparations program, we're going to have the Black Shark Tank. We're going to have the Black Shark Tank with the reparations program. You go there, you join up the reparations program. You get your company. If you have a company, small startup company, small mom and pop shop, in the community and you're giving jobs, you're helping the community, we're going to help you. And once you get blacklisted, you are able to get a loan between $10,000 and $250,000, and it's going to be very liberal terms, and we're going to look at you in a way that we're not going to require so much things like the conventional banking system requires. Now, you got to make enough money to pay the money back, but we're not going to look, you know, very strategically at all the things that the conventional banking system looks at. And we also want you to remember that if you have intellectual property, if you have a startup and it's not physically developed, go ahead and join the reparations program. And we'll have an application online that you can fill out, and we'll get back to you. Somebody from the Black Shark Tank will get back to you and further discover what you're doing in your business as we go forward. So we got, and we also want to remind people also, Dr. Winborn, we keep forgetting, we open up a new office in the Mount Vernon area. We have a brand new office we opening up for training and opportunities. We're going to do the Acts of Kindness program. We're bringing all that stuff back. I'll give a little hand for Neo's new office. We're getting everything fixed up. We're getting repainted and stuff of that nature. We're getting desks and stuff like that. We're going to have a marketing team come together. We're going to be working on all these things. And as you come into the office and start working, you're going to learn entrepreneurship. You're going to learn how to start a business, how to own a business, how to get a business started. So we want you to also realize that there are several ways to get in touch with us. One way to get in touch with us is 914-363-9007. 914-363-9007. If you want to participate in the Acts of Kindness, you want to come up to the Neo Nation office, and you want to study in marketing, and you want to work and participate in helping our communities, you can come up as well. You can also reach out to me personally. My email is revron, the number 11, at gmail.com. revron, the number 11, at gmail.com. And Dr. Winborn, I know we got an 800 number, and we got some other ways to contact us as well.
Yeah, the 800 number is 888-UNN-CASH. Again, that's 888-UNN, United Negro Nation, CASH, C-A-S-H.
Great, great, great. Now, I know that... I know Miss Tiki Williams was traveling, and she's probably in a difficult situation. But I got a very interesting call from a young man down in the neck of our woods, down in Harlem, New York, has a very interesting question. His name is Jamal Jones. He's from Harlem, New York, New York. Y'all know Harlem. Mm-hmm. Shout out for Harlem. And he is first year in college. He's doing liberal arts programs right now, you know, which is I'm you know, all shout out to your young brother, 18 years old in college, trying to do your thing. And he says, what can he study? He was looking, you know, doing liberal arts and trying to find a field to go into that he can really get his feet wet, I guess, and get out there and make some money. So Jamal wants to know what things can he study in college that could prepare him to be a real estate agent and things of that nature, or have the understanding of what it is to be an investor, part of real estate, but to get into real estate, what kind of courses and things that he should study?
Wow. I don't know. honestly, because the knowledge that I have, I've obtained it from being out in the street and doing it. I found that the structured entertainment, the structured education that's given on some of these topics, are general and not very specific and kind of hard to apply in the real world, in the real world situation, when it comes to if we're talking about real estate. you know, the best thing, if there are specific real estate classes, or if you wanted to, I don't know, you know, I would say maybe some classes in cost accounting and things of that nature. But
right.
If I'm honest, young man, I think that you would probably learn real estate best from someone that's doing it, going out and getting you some books and reading up on people that's doing it, that's talking about different strategies, and you'll see one that makes sense to you, that registered with you, and nobody will have to tell you, it'll hit you, and you say, hey, you know what? I think I can do that. You know, for real. I mean, that's how it happens. It's like when I was talking about the purchasing of the notes. You know, I only did that because I was sitting somewhere and heard something, and I said to myself, you know what? I think I could do that. That makes sense. You know, and I went out and I did that deal that I was talking about. You know, what I didn't mention was that deal got written up in the paper. In the mortgage broker's magazine, that, you know, they wrote an article on me and, you know, putting that deal together. And so none of this I learned in school or in college. I learned it from going out and doing and talking to people that did it, and kind of learned from, you know, to some degree, trial and error. But I was inquisitive, and like you, I was always looking to learn, always wanting to learn, and even now, I'm thirsting and seeking out the knowledge, which sounds like this young man is doing, and I think that what I'm saying is there are a lot of places to get the knowledge that you're looking for that might not be on your curriculum.
Okay, we have Mrs. Tiki Williams back with us. We're so happy to have her back. Tiki, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I'm sorry.
Okay.
My phone.
We had a very interesting question. We had a very interesting question from Jamal Jones in Harlem, New York. Brother's 18 years old. He's in college. He's doing liberal arts right now. He did not know what he wanted to do, but he finds, and Dr. Wimborne gave him some suggestions as well, and he's finding himself lost in terms of a career, and he wants to know what courses can he take right now in college that would help him advance himself in real estate.
Well, you could see if they offer any type of real estate classes, but I would say business administration, that would be a very good class to take, because one thing about dealing with real estate, it's a business transaction. So really having those skills is going to be very helpful for you maneuvering through the real estate deal. So being able to be business savvy is going to be key. Also, if they have something on negotiations, because real estate is all about negotiations. If you can be a good negotiator, you know, real estate is a good game for you. So I would see what they had in regards to business, because pretty much anything that you could learn in the business aspect, you can bring that over to real estate. I came from the corporate world. I have a master's in organizational leadership. I managed healthcare call centers, patient access, and all of those skill sets that I learned in that corporate world has really helped me in my transition into real estate, because I'm dealing with a diverse group of people, from, hey, $100,000 homes all the way up to $1 million homes. So you deal with a variety of people. So just being able to have that that business savvy is going to be key. So what you are able to learn in college now, you will be able to transition those skill sets over to real estate. So one thing about learning about business, those business skills can go any and everywhere you go, in any genre or any type of skill set career you want to move to. Having just that basic business background and knowledge will be key. So I would say take advantage of that. I would also say, you know, if you want to, they have a lot of stuff online. If you wanted to join, like, some Facebook groups, if you're wanting to join some meetup groups, first-time, they have first-time realtor groups, and new wanting to be new realtors, you can join those groups just to get some insight and get a look and see on how real estate goes. I mean, you might even go ahead and try to pick a mentor now and ask a realtor, like, hey, can I just kind of, you know, shadow you through the process, through a deal? Most realtors, they really wouldn't mind letting you kind of see how that goes so you can see if this is a good fit for you. So definitely, yeah, go out, do some good networking. I know COVID is still, you know, out and about, but, you know, if you're able to do some networking events, real estate networking events, that'll give you some good insight too and good networking opportunities to meet some great people as well in the industry.
Okay, great, great. We have also Kathy Dixon from Oakland, California, and she wants to know in terms of opportunities for women in the real estate industry, and are there any advocating organizations that you belong to as well?
So real estate is dominated by women at this point. But
hello.
Real estate is we dominate this industry. No, this is a great industry, you know, for women. It's all about personality and what you're getting into it for. I mean, you know, you want to make sure that you want to get into the real estate for the right reasons. Don't get me wrong, the money is great, but if that's your only determining factor, then I don't know, it may not be a good fit. I mean, because, you know, we're here really to make a difference in people's lives. And so you need to be compassionate, empathetic, and being able to walk beside people to help them through those challenges, to help them gain access where others might try to deny them. I'm part of a couple of groups, Black Realtors. There's another big group I'm a part of, Real Estate Ladies That Rock. I just joined a veteran, the National, it's called VAREP. It's for veterans. And so where I can get certified to really work with veterans. So I'm part of that group because working with veterans, you really need to be have great knowledge about that process and also about their different benefits and what they qualify for, because, again, a lot of people don't want to use their program, but it's a great program. So there are a lot of different memberships out there. I'm also a part of, it's called Savvy Chicks in Real Estate, and that's another great group I'm a part of. So it's a lot of different groups. I'm part of also a real estate group, REN, where we also do investing. And so it just kind of depends what your niche is and what you would like to do in real estate, because there's so many different niches in real estate that you could just kind of pick and see what works well with you, your personality, and your passion.
Great, great. And Dr. Winborn, why don't you give the male version of what you just said?
Listen, there's no male version and women dominate. Yes, honey.
I love it. I love it. I love it.
I know why you married so long.
Listen, you know, I will say this though, for many years, and I tell people that when I have a couple in my office and they're talking about buying a property, I'm looking at both of them, but I'm talking to that woman because I know she's the one that's going to push this through. I know that she's the one. She knows where the papers are. Okay? She knows where the taxes are. She knows where the pay stubs are. She knows her W-2. She knows her Social Security number. She knows his, too. She probably knows his better than he do. And so women are, and I think that instinctively, and I say that I think that women, especially when it comes to housing, you know, I think in the back of their mind they feel like, listen, I got to make sure I'm housing my babies, I'm feeding my babies, and so they are and when it comes to buying and it comes to being on point in real estate, I would always rather work with the women than work with the men. And so, yeah, I mean, yes, dear.
So we don't have no of those beeping things where you can't hear you.
I'll talk to y'all later, you know.
Right, right. Brothers, don't get mad, you know. We don't want y'all sending him some bad, you're going to get some bad emails and whatnot, you know, from the brothers. But, you know, he's telling the truth, you know.
Listen, I mean, the brothers are doing their thing. The brothers are doing their thing. But if you look around now, when I go to different events, most of the, if there's 100, you know, of people in the industry, 65 of them are probably female. And so there is a certain liberation that I've seen in the real estate business when it comes to the sisters going out and, you know, doing their thing, whether it's being on the mortgage end or the realtor end. I've met tons and tons of women mortgage brokers, not just real estate agents. They're the broker now.
I got a shout-out for you when you got a minute.
Mm-hmm.
I got a shout-out for you from Brother Darryl Livingston from Newark, New Jersey. He said, "Brother, you sound like Steve Harvey in the strawberry lettuce."
Steve Harvey in the strawberry lettuce?
I don't know if you know about that, but Steve Harvey had this thing where he do these strawberry letters where women write in and they say, my man is not a nice guy. And then you know, Steve gives his little evaluation as a male, what you should do and what you should expect. So the brother's saying that, you know. You know, he thinks, you know. Strawberry letters, you know. But you're right. Yeah, no, both of y'all are right. Women are, and I was, you know, I was, I'm in a different industry where I retired from psychology, and African-American women, I always didn't understand. We have a Black Association of Black Psychologists and Psychiatrists. It's a national political organization pushing for, you know, more of us in leadership positions in that field. And, you know, Black women sort of broke up and went and started their own little thing. We were like, wow, what's all that about, you know? But they were dynamic. They got a lot of legislation passed. Did a lot of things in the industry.
To say, look at the number of Black women, or the number of women now that's even in politics. That's another change. I mean, they are saturating the political arena right now. So the sisters are stepping up, and you know, they're really doing their thing. I mean, my hat's off to them. You know, a lot of these industries were male-dominated for many, many years. And a lot of the sisters are just coming into the ideal that, you know, I can do this. I can do this just as good as the men. I can do it just as well as the men. And so you're seeing more and more women at it and doing it now than you have at any other time before, which now looks like there's a decrease in the men that are doing it. And, you know, it's time for the men. The power change.
Right, right. And men tend to have, you know, in all intents and purposes, you know, just being in different industries over the years myself, men in business, especially when it comes to selling, and just as you say, when you're talking to that couple, you're concentrating on that on the female in the group, and because she's going to be organized, she's going to be more astute, she's going to be more knowledgeable, she's going to be more studious in the process. And men, and I'm telling you, I sold cars for years when I was in college for General Motors, and you're right. It's always best. I learned that the hard way, because I thought, oh, you know, as a young guy growing up, I thought, well, you listen to the man because he got the money, he's the boss, da-da-da-da-da. Coming from South Carolina, you know how that goes. But finding out I was there, I was like my granddaughter say, duh, I was totally wrong. You know, it was the female whom I should have kept concentrating on, because she was the final analysis. She was the one that's going to make the decision. So you're right. You're right. It's sisters are doing extremely well, and they're moving us forward. And, you know, so there you go, brothers. Y'all know what's going on.
There go my strawberry letter.
There you go. Don't send me no bad emails. Dr. Wimborne said all the good stuff. Okay, Ms. Tiki Williams, there's a question for you from Linda Rondon, I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, from, she's from Hawaii, Honolulu, and she wants to know, Honolulu, very, very, very good place to be. She wants to know, are there any exciting opportunities for people that are bilingual, women that are bilingual, women that work that over there in her Hawaii, she's not seeing a lot of, you know, realtors, female, and there seem to be a lot of opportunities over there. She's seeing people coming from what they call the mainland and doing a lot of sales in and doing a lot of, you know, property sales, development, real estate development, everything from the mainland. But she didn't see a lot of activities from the natives in Hawaii. And she's wondering, should they organize and start a group or some kind of organization so that they can educate each other and, I guess, make a political move and get women on the island of Hawaii stronger in the real estate opportunities?
Oh, I would say absolutely yes. When there is opportunity for growth, I could definitely take it. Especially during this time, the market that we're in, I would say definitely if you can gather some women together to be able to collectively come together and work together to make this industry stronger, absolutely, I say go for it. I would probably first start with the real estate. I would go to the real estate school. Camp out there and see, but see who's there, but also reach out to some more experienced realtors if you're able to find some women already established there and to get their insight and feedback and start a group there, because I'm pretty sure if it's not a lot, they're probably feeling isolated. And they would definitely probably love an opportunity to be able to come together and create a group like that and to be able to educate more women, to encourage them to be a part, you know what I'm saying, of real estate. And not only just being a realtor, but being a broker, being a developer. I mean, it's so much more that, you know what I'm saying, we can do is just being a sales agent. It's a lot that is available to all of us in real estate. And so I think it's a great opportunity and a great idea.
Okay. There's we have Keisha Brown from Philly. She's 16 years old, and she wants to know what age should a young person start to seek out opportunities in real estate?
Soon as they can count.
There you go.
There's no age.
So, I'm sorry, go ahead, Dr. Winborn.
As young as you can, you know, there's no age. You can, if you have the means and the ability to buy a property at 16, 14, you know what you're doing, by all means. I encourage people to start as young as possible. You know, that's what we need to do. We need to start training our children on how to be entrepreneurs and get our children out of this labor mentality and let them know that the money that is made in this country is not made from people that is trading their time for a check every week, but it's those that are being paid for their talent and being able to create their own wealth and taking their destiny into their hands. So I think that that's what we need to start doing. We have to make up from where our educational system has fallen off, because we have tons and tons of our children that are in these schools, that are in these institutions, that come out with nothing but a piece of paper and a lot of debt, and they got master's degrees and they flipping burgers at McDonald's, which suggests that there's something wrong with the system. So I would say to that young person, There is no age. As soon as you can count, as soon as you can, if you can sell lemonade, you can buy houses. How about that?
Now, her follow-up text, maybe Tiki want to take this one. When can she start making money?
As soon as you get an income property. So you can start making money right away. It all depends on the type of property that you go to purchase. So, for example, you could be 16-year-old and you could have a great savings account, or you could have assets already in your name. And guess what you could do? You could go buy you, well, back home we have duplexes or in fourplexes, or as they consider them now, multifamilies. You can go and buy, just say you want to buy a duplex, which is two units side by side. Well, hey, if you have enough money to pay cash for that, at that point, any money that is coming in is income for you once you pay the regular fees for, you know, the property, just say the sewer and garbage, you know, normally the tenant is responsible for their lights and gas, and then, you know, you do have your insurance for the property. But everything after that now becomes your income, your residual income. So you're making money right away. The only time you don't start making money right away is just say if you have to buy a property and you have to finance the property. And, again, numbers have to make sense. And Dr. Winburn, he was excellent on that, basically talking about numbers. Your numbers have to make sense. You know, you never want to buy a property and you're not making money, or you're barely making $100 or $200 a month on a property. That's not going to cut it. So you really have to understand the numbers game, and what is it that I want to make off of this property each month to be able to sustain itself, and so that I can also get residual income. Because the last thing you want to do is end up paying more money out that you're getting in. So you definitely don't want to do that. So that's imperative. So I think at this point is really working with someone who has experience in this and allowing them so they can mentor you. And they can talk to you about this numbers game, because it's, like Dr. Winburn, and he's a numbers man, I can already tell, he's going to let you know what is a good deal and what's not a good deal, if those numbers make sense. Because it all boils down to if the numbers make sense. You can love the property, wow. It doesn't matter, but do the numbers make sense?
Right.
Because this real estate is a numbers game.
Y'all are saying,
it's not an emotional thing.
Right. So y'all are saying that there is no age gap when a person can sell real estate and whatnot legally. There's no age restriction, nothing like that?
No. I mean, you can get your working papers at 14. All right? So my job is I sell real estate. The other thing that I want to say to the young lady is that if you don't have any money, what you may want to consider is what we talked about earlier. You may want to see if you could buy broker some notes, become a note broker. And all you're doing is shifting paper, okay? And you know, I mentioned going to the Hall of Records, but the reality of it is that's the old way. That's how I came up doing it. Everything is online now. So you can go online and go to the Hall of Records and go to the books, and you can go to all the mortgages, ABC Bank, ABC Bank, ABC Bank, boom, Mr. Smith. Oh, Mr. Smith got a note he's holding. Let's talk to Mr. Smith. Let's see if he want to sell it. Then we can go to on the other end. We done Googled and we done found out all of the people that's looking to buy. So where do you come in? You come in because, for the most part, people are lazy and they don't want to do the legwork. But if you have the time and the energy to sit on the internet and dig the information up, what you're doing is, think about it as you are mining. You are mining for gold, okay? And what is gold? Gold is when you come across those notes that are being held by individuals. And then what you want to do is you want to take that gold and then sell it to somebody else that's looking to buy the gold, and you want to increase the price, $1, $2, and you're going to put the difference in your pocket. And you found a way that you can make money in the real estate without having had to even be involved in the property, and all you're doing is shuffling paper. And now you've accumulated maybe some money. Now you want to take something and you want to put it into some sticks or into real estate. You follow me? So there are ways to do it. And, again, you can make money right away. Don't take a long time to do that.
Great, great, great. You know, this has been fantastic, but as you all know, that time, you know, wait for no man, as the Bible says. And so, Mrs. Tiki Williams, give us a little general synopsis of what you expect for the show, what people can expect, you know, things that you expect to bring to the show, and what your vision for the show, you know, is about. Oh, okay. I see what happened here. I see what happened here. A little technical difficulties. You're there now, Mrs. Tiki Williams.
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. It's just, I don't know if it's the area I'm in right now, but I'm keeping getting a call failed.
The area is maybe the engineer accidentally cut your mic off. I don't know. I'm just saying. I don't know.
But a general question is just, you know, give the audience a little idea of what they expect next week, what they expect from the show, what your vision for the show is, and what you would like to see happen in the show as we go forward.
So really, my goal is to be able to educate people on real estate and on home ownership and the importance of it and how we're able to obtain it and the importance of having it. Like I stated before a couple weeks ago, we only own 44% African-American people, we only own 44% of homes, where our counterparts are 73%. So we are behind the eight ball, and Dr. Wimborne said it great. It's about educating our children now on the importance of understanding credit. Cash is king, but credit is power. And understanding, you know, at an early age, how we need to make sure that we teach our children the importance of credit, of being financial literacy, and understanding that real estate can grow your wealth portfolio overnight, pretty much, if you work the right deal. And so it is the fastest way to increase your wealth and create your legacy. So my goal for the show is to help from the knowledge that I have and the knowledge of all the other great people on the show is to help educate everyone in this process so that we can help ourselves and help our children and help our communities grow and be strong. So that's my vision for it.
Great, great. Dr. Wimborne, any final thoughts from you as well?
Well, you know, I just wanted to encourage everyone that's listening to continue to listen to the show as Ms. Williams come every week and bring more information. I'm excited about the program. I planned on tuning in and lending my support to everything that is going on. We want you to do the same. But we also want you to remember the other shows that we have going on every night. Every night, Neo Nation is on the air. Sunday night is the Ethiopian World Federation Incorporated, local number 26. They're all the shows start at 7 o'clock. You want to tune into that? That's really important. We don't talk enough about the importance of the Ethiopian World Federation and what it means to Black people, and why you need to be a part of it. Why you need to take your membership and claim your divine inheritance. So that's on Sunday nights or Monday nights. We have Black Alice in Wonderland with the wonderful Queen Amina, who is so full of information, a wealth of information. You want to be a part of that on Monday nights. And on Wednesday nights, we have Ralph Brown, who called in earlier to give our show support for Ms. Williams in her new endeavor. That's on Wednesday night, leadership, life leadership. She's a coach. So you want to tune into that. She also has a wealth of knowledge. Thursday night, we have the Neo Nation Weekly Conversation with Jaquim Diaz. You don't want to miss that. On Friday night, we have the Black Business Billionaires with this gentleman here on the other side of the mic, the great Red Ron, a.k.a. Mr. Electric. Then on Saturday, we have Reek Moore with Greg Hall. He called in earlier to say congratulations to Ms. Williams. And so you want to be a part of that, too. And what Greg Hall and Reek Moore, their program, is that they're talking about all different type of income opportunities that are available out there that we all could take advantage of and continue to change our financial situation. But again, before I leave, before I turn the mic over, I want to encourage everybody to go by the website, Project Neo. It is there for us. It is there for us to create financial independence amongst ourselves. A small investment into the National Negro Treasury will help put you and your family and your loved ones on the way to financial independence. It's a great system. Go to the site, read about the missions, read about look at the various reparation package, look and see where you can get in, and then get in when you get in, and then watch the wheels begin to turn for you. God bless everybody. I was glad to be here tonight in this maiden voyage for Ms. Williams. Thank you for having me. Thank you for choosing to spend time with an old man and listen to me blab about an old bunch of stuff that don't mean anything to anybody but me. But thank you for putting up with me, and I hope that I said something that encouraged or have been a blessing to someone. I turn it back over to Reverend Mark.
Well, once again, people, you know, I love this brother. I love him, what he said. Pastor Hezekiah Walker says, it's got to get better because God is in control, and everybody listen because it is real.
Come on, everybody, put your hands together. It's got to get better. All over the world, listen to these words. People come.
People come.
People go.
People go.
Your life has been.
Your life has been.
Out of control.
Out of control.
You're confused.
You're confused.
But don't worry.
Don't worry. Your soul, it will get better.
It's got to get
better.
Yeah.